So thank you all. This is our second day of our 47th annual conference here in Erie County. So for those of you who weren't here yesterday, welcome. And I just want to acknowledge our panelists and presenters from this morning. They all did a phenomenal job, so thank you. I'd like to introduce someone who really is the essence of public servant, someone who's been serving our community for many years in several different capacities and has remained ever vigilant in the pursuit of women's rights, our deputy county executive, the great Maria White. Please welcome her.
Good afternoon, everybody. I am just delighted to be with you this afternoon. My name is Maria White. I am the Deputy County Executive, and on behalf of County Executive Mark Poloncarz, welcome here. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for the good work you do every day. It is my great pleasure to introduce our first guest speaker, Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul. The Lieutenant Governor was elected in 2014, becoming New York State's highest-ranking female elected official, and uses her position to advance gender equity across the state. As many of you know, the theme for this year's conference is embracing our past and empowering our future. Lieutenant Governor Hochul truly embodies this message. In 2016, she was elected chair of New York State's Women's Suffrage Centennial Commission, thus honoring the legacy of suffragists and women rights activists in New York. Lieutenant Governor Hochul defends women's rights today by championing important efforts like the fair wage campaigns, paid family leave, and battling the gender wage gap. Lieutenant Governor Hochul is also spearheading the fight against sexual assault on college campuses with her Enough is Enough legislation, a comprehensive sexual assault policy that defines affirmative consent and outlines procedures and guidelines for universities to follow throughout New York State. Governor Cuomo signed this legislation into law in 2016. Lieutenant Governor Hochul's commitment to inspiring a new generation of women to aspire for great leadership roles and representation evidences her desire to empower our future. The hashtag New York Women Lead initiative is just one of the many ways that Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul encourages women to reach for leadership roles in their given fields and pursue public service. I should know. I know personally that Kathy Hochul embodies our conference theme of embracing our past and empowering our future. And I know this personally because I have benefited from Kathy Hochul's investment of time, resources, experience, and encouragement when she has mentored me, both as a candidate for public office and as a leader in local government. Few women have done so much to protect and progress women's rights in New York State. Would you please join me in giving a warm welcome to our Lieutenant Governor and my friend, Kathy Hochul.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you. You're very kind. Thank you. Thank you so much, and I am delighted to be doing an event in my hometown of Buffalo. I hope all of you who come from all over the country, in fact, and I understand the largest contingent may be from Hawaii, so aloha. Hope you feel welcome here. You've come the greatest distance, and I hope you have an opportunity to explore this city. It's been literally transformed under this governor, and I'm so proud to have been his lieutenant governor for the last 2.5 years. But what you're seeing in Buffalo in 2017 is not what you would have even seen 6 years ago. So get out to Canal Side, get out to the waterfront. When I'm in town, I ride my bike down there. I was down there this morning before I drove to Rochester to talk about the 200th anniversary of our Erie Canal system, and then I'm heading down to Chautauqua to open a hotel shortly. But this is where I needed to be today. So happy to see sisters from all over our nation with a common purpose. And all of you have dedicated your lives to something that we each feel deeply passionate about, which is bettering the lives of other women. It's as simple as that. And so I commend you for your work on various commissions. I recall when I was cutting my teeth way back running for local office back in 1994, and needless to say, I was the only woman elected in my town, and all the jokes would come out about how, oh my gosh, she's going to paint the walls pink and all this stuff, you know, the usual stuff. But I was involved in my county commission on the status of women. And we had this radical idea back in 1994 that, wow, shouldn't there be more women represented on boards of directors? Okay, are we still working on this in 2017? Have we hit 50% yet? No, we haven't. In fact, I'm going to say 75% because you get to make up for a lot of lost time. But we still have ambitious goals. We still have a lot of work to do, and I'm so delighted to see the energy in this room of people willing to do that work. I was honored to be introduced by Maria White. Maria White, if you do not know this, rose up very quickly at a young age. She became the majority leader of our county legislature. Again, a lonely position. Very few women had held that before. One of her predecessors is Joan Bozer here, one of my icons in local government. She was there back when I was just working, volunteering on campaigns. So Joan, welcome. Great to see you again as well. But Maria reminds me of how we have to help each other. And I'll never forget her little daughter, Charlotte, who's 8 now. Was a baby, and she took her, because she had no child care, she had to take her to a candidates forum. And I'm watching her chasing around this toddler while she should be preparing her remarks and trying to get her act together and get in the game, right? So I like scooped up little Charlotte and took her outside and says, you know what, you don't need to worry about her. I haven't dropped a kid lately, so I promise I'll bring her back. So that just reminded me, it was a simple gesture, and she's reciprocated 1,000 times in how she supported me, but nobody understands what we go through more than each other, right? I mean, we know what it's like. We know what it's like when the only woman in the room 1,000 times. Whether I'm speaking to women in law enforcement, or I'm speaking to women in technology, or I'm speaking to women in politics, or construction. I speak in New York City often to women in that lonely field of construction. But there is a special bond, and there's a sense that we owe it to each other to help each other out. And I think a lot of people have a different perception. Women figure out the secret sauce of success in their field, and then they kind of close the door and they don't want to share the recipe. That is so false. That is so false. I mean, I think that's what people want to think, because they get nervous when we get together and start plotting, okay? They should get nervous when we get together and start plotting, because I will tell you, I am so energized. Because whether it was the hard-hit loss of last November for me and perhaps many of you in this room, but the realization that we did not get as far as we thought, we have a sense of urgency. We have urgency. We have people that have never been in the political process before. No one else has taken, people have never taken to the streets like they do now. People are making sure that women's voices are heard. And I'd love to see that, especially young women. And I have a daughter, and I'm so proud of her and a son. I mean, they live in Washington, D.C., where they were born when I worked for Senator Moynihan. And I don't think a week goes by where they don't tweet me or text me a picture of them protesting something. So I feel like I did well raising a protesting daughter. And that's what we need to do. Role model our advocacy and our passion to the next generation. Hold their hands. Talk to women who want to run for office. And someone who was there for me when I was considering running for statewide office just came in the room. Our great Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is here as well. And in fact, no one knows more than the senator how hard it is to raise money to run for office. And she made sure she gave me my very first check when I decided I was going to run for Congress from the most Republican district in New York. Kirsten Gillibrand had my back then, and she continues to this day. So we are blessed to have someone of her caliber and her willingness to share her talents with other women and encourage them to run for office, and you'll hear more from her shortly. But I just want to speak briefly about what we're doing in the state of New York. Fortunately for us, we actually have a governor who's hardwired to think like a woman. Okay, this is a good thing. He's got a very influential mother. She had been the first lady of New York, the wife of Mario Cuomo. He has many, many sisters. He has 13 nieces and 3 daughters. So in that environment, If he's not talking about sexual assault on college campuses, he's talking about women getting paid equally. He's talking about the need for us to have a generous programs and support for child care. So fortunately, we have a governor who gets it. And that makes my job a lot easier. We've enacted very progressive policies here in the state of New York that I get to go around the state and talk about. So I'm very proud of that. But I'm also cognizant that we have so much more work to do. And you heard from Karen, and again, thank you, Karen, for hosting us here today in Erie County. This is the 100th anniversary of women securing the right to vote in our state, and you are going off to Seneca Falls, at least I think you're heading off to Seneca Falls in a couple of days. And in 1848, that was when women came together and started challenging the status quo in a very bold way. And they had the audacity to say not just should they have the right to vote, but they wanted to change the Constitution and say not just all men are created equal, all men and women are created equal. That started right where you're going to be going the next couple of days. Soak in that inspiration. But don't just look back. Don't say, yes, that's a great history. Belongs in the history books. Fabulous. I know my statistics. 1848. Someone 100 years from now are going to look back at us and say, what did we do? What is our place in history? How did we move women further ahead, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's more in the halls of power, elective office? What did we do? How many young women did we mentor to inspire to rise to the top of their chosen profession? What did we do? That is how we will be judged, and we should be judged. And I'm putting that weight on all your shoulders. I do this to New Yorkers, and I'm now spreading it across the nation with the women in this room. We have a moral obligation to make lives better for women, because if we don't do it, who the heck is going to? I'm tired of relying on other people. I approach this with urgency, impatience, and a sense that we have a limited time on this planet. And God forbid that we leave our time on earth without doing something to help women who you would have thought 100 years ago when we got the right to vote, that meant equality. Well, I also chair the governor's study, and I'm going around the state talking about pay injustice, pay inequality. And I don't need to say any more on that topic because you're going to hear from a rock star, a former lieutenant governor. I have a special place in my heart for lieutenant governors, Evelyn Murphy. She's going to talk about her groundbreaking work on this issue. But I'm going to say that I have concluded women suffer from two things that start with the letter C. Lack of confidence. In one sense, they hold themselves back. And I can say this because I stand here guilty as charged. I was not going to run for that seat on the town board back in 1994, despite the fact that I had been an attorney, private practice, worked in Homeland Security for corporations, had been counsel to Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, had worked with Tim Russert on campaigns since the 70s. I didn't have the confidence to run for the lowest rung of government in my hometown because I thought, well, maybe I'm not ready yet. Until a 22-year-old young man, just out of college, living in his parents' house, never had a job, never paid taxes, decides he's qualified to run and runs for that position. A wake-up call. And luckily I had a husband who said, honey, why aren't you doing that? So I did. And I never looked back. And that is a story I'm telling because I want to know this year, where are the 22-year-old young women who have the confidence to do just what I didn't have the confidence to do a long time ago. So we can work on that. You have speakers talking about this. I saw your program. What a dynamic program. So listen to them. Inspire others. The other part is as simple as saying the other C is childcare. I swear this is the only thing holding us back is women feel that responsibility to take care of our children. I get that. And we're also squeezed because we're also taking care of our mothers and our fathers and our grandmas and grandpas. I've been there. I was always the one, even when I was a member of Congress, would come home on weekends and take my aunt and uncle to the doctor appointments because their kids lived out of town. That's what we do. And we're darn good at it. But you know what? That should not be a barrier to achieving what we want to in our lives. It shouldn't be a barrier for us. It should not be a barrier for our daughters. And so we, as a responsibility in government, to make sure that we push to make sure there are child care policies and paid family leave policies that allow us to do it all. You talk about work-life balance, There is no such thing. Don't even try. I have concluded this after a lifetime of raising kids. They're launched. They ended up okay. I'm proof, okay? You don't need to be there every minute. I re-raised two feminists, a young man and a young woman. They're fine. And so get over that hang-up. Get over the mother guilt hang-up, okay? They will survive. They're going to work you over, but I understand you're going to be okay. So this is my snapshot of my life's experience that I want to impart to you. But if we had childcare and generous paid family leave like all across the nation, and Kirsten Gillibrand's a champion for this in Washington, this should be in the no-brainer category. Why don't we have this day and age? And that's something I hope all of you on your various commissions will continue to fight for. Workplace, pay equity. Yes, New York State is number one in the nation for having the smallest pay gap. 89 cents to a dollar. Actually, if you're in New York City, it's 94 cents to the dollar. But why is there a gap at all? And what the heck? Why don't we make more than the guys? We're worth more, okay? How about that idea? Why are we making more than the men? So those are my humble thoughts. I am delighted to be with you today. I have to go cut a ribbon. I'm really good at these kindergarten skills that I get to use every day, a couple hours from here. But I am thrilled you're here. I'm thrilled you do what you do every single day. Keep at it. We need you. We need more women to run for office. Kirsten, I'm sure, will talk about that. But we desperately appreciate everything you do, because this could be the year. 2017 could be the year when it all changes with people like you, stewards of your commissions back in your homes. And I want to thank you for coming and sharing my great hometown. Take care very much and have a great day.
Everyone. My name is Emily Garrett. I am the intern here at the Erie County Commission on the Status of Women. This fall, I'll be going into my senior year at the University of Notre Dame, majoring in English and Gender Studies, and finally applying to law schools. My experiences in college have cultivated a passion for gender equality and women's rights, and I found myself looking up to women who have made a career of this passion. United States Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is one of these women, and I'm so proud to introduce her to you all today. Since her appointment to the United States Senate in 2009, Senator Gillibrand has repeatedly prioritized the rights of women, LGBTQ folk, and sexual assault survivors. One of her first successful campaigns in the Senate was the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, which banned gays from openly serving in the military. Since then, she has confronted sexual assault on two of the most difficult fronts, military and college campuses. As chair of the Armed Services Subcommittee in 2013, Senator Gillibrand held the first hearing on sexual assault in the military in nearly a decade, and later assembled a large bipartisan coalition around the Military Justice Improvement Act, which would remove sexual assault cases from the chain of command. Senator Gillibrand built another bipartisan coalition around the Campus Accountability and Safety Act, legislation that would finally hold college campuses accountable for sexual assaults which occurred on them. Senator Gillibrand also fights for the economic justice of women and families by supporting bills which would raise the minimum wage, make quality childcare more affordable, create universal pre-K, and ensure equal pay for equal work. Lastly, I would like to thank Senator Gillibrand for all she's done recently to defend women's rights, right to access health care. It is a huge honor to introduce the woman who has not only been an empowering role model for me, but has been a fierce advocate for women across the country. Please help me in welcoming United States Senator from the great state of New York, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand.
I want to thank Dr. Karen King and Emily Garrett for their leadership and for hosting this event. I also want to thank Emily for that lovely introduction. I appreciate it very much. I have high hopes for your future. And I want to thank everyone here in Buffalo. It's wonderful to be here with so many inspiring women, so many people who are dedicating themselves to helping others and to making a difference. I want to recognize Kathy Hochul, who is an extraordinary lieutenant governor and someone I really enjoyed serving with in Congress. She's a woman of great character and enormous leadership, so we should be very proud to have her as our lieutenant governor. Please give her a round of applause. So I love the fact that Kathy talked a little bit about suffrage, because I've been studying suffrage over the last year and I've read a bunch of biographies. And New York's history is so rich with leaders of the suffrage movement, from Elizabeth Cady Stanton doing her statement of sentiments that women's rights are as important as men's rights and that the Constitution should cover us too, to Susan B. Anthony, who spent her life traveling across New York State first to get equal rights in New York State, to get property rights in New York State, to allow women to keep their children even if they were divorced. Huge issues affected women at that time. She spent her whole life traveling this state and the whole country. Both Elizabeth and Susan worked very hard to end slavery and worked in the abolition movement and worked for equality their entire lives. They never got to see the right to vote. But one of the things that I really loved about them is they tried everything. There was nothing they weren't willing to try. And one of the things that Susan tried was voting. She actually showed up to vote 1 year, and she got far enough to register. The person who took her registration was shocked and amazed because women weren't allowed to vote, but she still got through the registration, and she got to vote. But after she voted the next day, they came to arrest her. But when she appeared in court, the judge was too embarrassed to actually incarcerate her and too embarrassed to make her pay her fine. But she and a number of women in that year thought, at least if we try to show that the Constitution covers us as men do, that they can make that issue stronger. And so I truly believe that we can learn from the suffragists in our generation, that they used every measure they could to get the word out. So they traveled across the state, they went to town halls, they gave speeches, they had a local newspaper, they published stories, they wrote op-eds. They did everything they could to be heard. And so we should do the very same. Sometimes it's a stunt, like going to vote so that you can get the press. But that's not dissimilar from carrying a sign and marching. It's not dissimilar from showing up at a town hall. It's not dissimilar from tweeting or using Instagram or any of the things that we use today to get our voices out. But these suffragists really understood what it meant to be heard. And they spent their entire lives trying to be heard. So I think that we have a responsibility now to very much focus on how we can dedicate ourselves to speaking out for women's rights and making sure that we are heard. We will have the 100th anniversary of suffrage in 2020, and it's an incredible milestone for this country to celebrate. And I know that we're going to take this opportunity to make sure that we can educate our children to know what it actually took to win the right to vote in this country and the unparalleled importance of the women's suffrage movement in American history. So I worked with the women senators to actually pass a bill that would commemorate and celebrate the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment that passed in Congress and was signed into law by this president. Hard to believe. But yes, he did. And so this bill is called the Women's Suffrage Centennial Commission Act, and basically it'll provide funding for museums, for libraries, for any institution that wants to educate our kids about suffrage and what happened over the last 200 years to achieve it. It will award grants to organizations all around the state, including many women's commissions that are already working on celebrating the 19th Amendment, because we fundamentally need to inspire young people, especially our girls, to become engaged in public service and to never be afraid to use their voices, to never be afraid to speak out. Because even though now that we have the right to vote, we all know that there are so many structural challenges left in society today that overwhelmingly affect women and girls. And so I think that we have to focus on these issues, and they include things as simple as equal pay for equal work. The fact that we still don't have equal pay in this country is shocking. even though we have women and girls participating in so many more industries and careers than ever before, as scientists, as engineers, as mathematicians, as in politics, a lot of the workplace rules have not kept up with the actual face of the workforce. Because we don't have equal pay, because we don't have something as simple as a national paid leave plan. We are literally the only industrialized country in the world that doesn't have paid leave. And so if you have a new baby, if your mother is or father is dying, if your spouse is ill, if a family member is ill, you don't have the flexibility necessarily to meet those family needs. And for a lot of people, they are making those horrible choices of, do I stay at work and earn the money I need to feed my family, or do I quit my job to meet that need and give the care that's needed in our family? So I think having a national paid leave program would mean that more women would stay in the workplace longer. They would be able to achieve their full economic potential, to be able to stay in a job, achieve seniority. And one of the reasons why two-thirds of minimum wage workers are still women is because every time we ramp off, we are ramping back on at a lower wage with less seniority. We call it the sticky floor, and it's real. And it's one of the reasons why women have trouble getting off it, because we have no paid leave. We know that as our role as parents and caregivers, structural changes like universal pre-K would make a difference. To know that every four-year-old is in school means not only are you able to be in the workplace, but that your child is getting that essential good early childhood education that really sets them apart and sets their future for how quickly they'll learn. It makes a difference if we have affordable daycare in this country. We don't have affordable quality daycare for all families. We just don't. Average daycare in this state is about $10,000 a year. So if you're a minimum wage earner who's only earning $15,000, you can't afford any quality daycare in your area. You'll have to rely on informal care. So whether that's your mother, whether it's your sister, whether it's a friend, whether it's a lady down the street, that's unreliable. And if that caregiver is sick and you miss work, you may well be fired because you don't have any sick days and you don't have any vacation days. That's the reality that women face all across our state and all across the country. So we're left to what our job is. And I think our job is to fight for these issues, to fight to allow women to reach their full economic potential, to be able to start businesses, to get access to capital, to be able to provide for their families, to reach their full economic potential. And I promise you, until every woman and girl is able to reach their potential, this country will never reach its potential. And so I think it's fundamentally incumbent on us to do that work. And I'm just going to close with one notion about why I feel optimistic. Did anyone here march at the Women's March, any of the marches? I certainly did. It was one of those moments in history that it was so amazing to participate in, and it was probably the most inspiring political moment of my life to be part of millions of people around the globe marching for what they believed in. And what I loved so much about the Women's March was that it was an intersectional march, that it was about all issues that we all care about. So whether your sign said LGBT equality or women's reproductive freedom or Black Lives Matter or Muslim rights or immigration rights or clean air, clean water, it didn't matter. All those issues matter to us, and we are going to fight for them because we believe in them so strongly. And the activism that was created through that march, the notion that our voices and our views are important, just has continued to grow. And more people are being heard, whether they're showing up at the town hall using their Indivisible app, whether they're marching in front of their congressman's office because he's not voting the right way, or whether they're signing up to actually run for office themselves. It's transformational. And even Emily's List reported, while maybe by now 100,000 candidates have signed up to be trained, they have something like 18,000 people signing up to be trained to run this year. So I see enormous potential across the country and across this state from women just like yourselves who are determined that this is not the end of the story, that we are going to fight for the country we believe in, we're going to fight for the rights that we hold so dear, and we are not giving up, we are not giving in, we are not going away, and we are going to fight to the end. So thank you for being part of that, and thank you for welcoming me today.